So I hope you don't want that one. But you can have the other five if this thing works. Right. Let's have a look where we are in our journey of life for tonight. This is where we've come so far. We're up to number four Wednesday, Travelling Light for the Journey. This talk, as John mentioned earlier on, is about what you're carrying through life. Life is a journey. You always have to pack things for your journey when you're going a long way, just like you pack for camp. And so that's what we're talking about tonight. I've found a picture that I think describes kind of the journey that some people make through life when they come on camp once a year. This is a picture. This is the best I can find. Now, this is why I think this road might be a bit like your life. Number one, it's uphill. So it's hard work, right? And so most of the time it's a bit of a sweat because these are pretty steep. But you know, just once in a while you just get a little bit of a nice down bit. It just feels a little bit easier. And that's camp. You come on camp, it's like, and then you get home from camp and it gets really tough again. And you come on camp again next year and there's a bit of a breather and then it's up again. And so it goes. And certainly when I was a young Christian and I was struggling in my life and going to camp every year, that was kind of, that was how my life was. And maybe that describes you, I don't know. But certainly life's not easy, is it? We're not suggesting life is easy. It certainly won't be if you become a Christian. Life won't be all easy. Our message is not become a Christian and everything will be easy. And because of that, you've got to be careful what you carry along the way. Because heavy things take their toll, don't they? I think I've got a picture of a guy carrying heavy things. Now, this is an American soldier in Afghanistan. Anybody want to estimate how heavy his rucksack is? Well, I can't do it in kilos. Give it in real money. In pounds. What's that in pounds? Yeah, could be, couldn't it? Could easily be. He's got weapons. He's got a roll mat. Looks, so he's obviously sleeping. There's a tent. And you know, I mean, that's a heavy pack. Would you like to go up that road in that pack? Not really. Neither would I. They've got to trudge through the desert in Afghanistan and climb mountains. They're climbing mountains with those packs. That's hard work, isn't it? I'm glad that I'm not going through life carrying one of those. But I did set out once on a long distance walk, the Pennine Way from Derbyshire. Anyone ever here tried the Pennine Way? It's a long walk. It starts in Edale in Derbyshire, it goes up to Scotland. 270 miles. That's a long way. And my pack wasn't quite as big as that, but we packed our rucksacks and off we set, and it was tough. And you can only go two ways at the Pennine Way. You either go south to north or north to south. And we were about sort of 3 days in, and we were all complaining about how heavy our rucksacks were. And then we saw this bloke coming the other way. And he was the smallest bloke. Who's the shortest person on this camp? Who's the shortest? Who's the shortest? How tall are you, Tiz? Lickle. Okay, Lickle. So this bloke was about as big as Lickle, and he was really, really small, and he had these cocktail sticks for legs, and they were tiny. They were minuscule, and he had on his back the biggest rucksack you've ever seen in your life. And we were laughing as we saw him coming the other way, because we thought every step, we thought his legs were going to snap. You know, as he took these steps with his massive pack. And as he came past him, he thought, they're asking where he started. So we asked him, where did you start? How far have you come? He said, I've come all the way from Scotland. And we thought, no, there's no way his legs are going to stand up to all this weight. But he did. He managed to keep on going. I thought, I'm glad I'm not carrying a pack as big as he's got. I didn't know what he had in his pack, whether it was a kitchen sink or his own bunk bed or something, I don't know. But there was so much in it. And I thought, you've got to be careful what you're carrying. Guys, we don't want you to be overweight in what you're carrying. We don't want you to be carrying so much that you start getting so tired and weary in life that you have to keep stopping. You question the point of what your Christian life is all about. Sometimes it threatens your health if you carry too much, and sometimes you want to quit. Some of you have said to me this week that you've had experiences like that living as a Christian. One of the reasons could be that you're trying to take too much with you. You're trying to hang on to too much while you're walking the journey of life as a Christian, or seeking to do that through the Christian life. There are struggles, there are difficulties, and you've got to be very careful how you walk. I'll never forget a man called Trevor Ridioff in my life. When I was your age, he was our community worker. He ran the local youth club, and he took us through all the outdoor pursuits and everything like that. Trevor really off taught me how to camp, he taught me how to canoe, he taught me how to run, he taught me how to go on long distance walks, he taught me how to rock climb, how to abseil. He was that kind of guy who just took it. He was just a hero, was Trevor really off. We all loved him. And he taught us how to do something called packing a rucksack. Now, I know that may not sound a really sexy and sort of trendy and wonderful thing to do, but he taught us that. And shall I give you the Trevor really off tip for packing a rucksack? This is what he taught us to do. He said, think of everything you might possibly want on your walk, stick it all in your rucksack, pack the whole thing up, put it on your back, fall to the ground because there's so much in it, take everything out, lay it on the floor, and take exactly one third of what you originally packed. That's his tip. I'll just offer it to you. Now, Trevor Idioff, he had such incredibly long legs. I mean, his legs were about as long as most airport runways, right? He was a tall bloke. He had these enormous legs. His stride was about as long as two men's bodies, you know, head to toe. He was the most enormous legs. And it takes people 3 weeks to walk the Pennine Way. Trevor Idioff did it in 9 days. 270 miles in 9 days. They're long legs. And you should see how light his backpack was. It didn't look anything like that. He managed it because he had nothing on his back. And the long legs were the help as well. But he was shooting through it. Guys, we don't want you to be carrying too much because it really can seriously damage your health. Here's a few more guys that are carrying a little bit too much. This is the annual wife carrying world championships. Did you know there was one? Well, there is. Have you been on? You can go on it, wifecarrying.com. You can go on. You know, here he is, you know, you see all the crowds, and there's the bloke with his wife on the back, and, you know, it's no joke, this, you know, they take it pretty seriously. In Europe, I've got to tell you, it was on just a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you saw it, the World Wife Carrying Championship, and last year it was a tight one thing, and an Estonian one. This year, the Greeks came in and won it. And there were a number of different techniques for carrying a wife on your back. Let's have a look at the different techniques. There's the basic piggyback technique, where you just stick your wife on the back and off you go with the old piggyback. I don't know if you can spot, by the way, that there were some sort of extra weights on the back of these ladies, because there are proper rules, you know, to the World Wife Carrying Championship. And if your wife doesn't weigh enough, you have to carry your wife and some bags on the back of your wife, right? If she's too slender and you want to cheat because you weigh 3 stone 4, you know, you have to carry extra weight. So anyway, so that's the basic piggyback technique. There's another one. You can go for the shoulder grab technique, where you kind of put her across the back. You know, and he looks like he's in well pain, that bloke, doesn't he? But anyway, because there's a water part of the course, you've got to go uphill and downhill and through a lake, and it's a serious business. Look, you know, she's got a sort of a helmet on, just in case. She obviously trusts her husband nicely. But there's another technique. This is the thigh strangulation technique. This is my name, by the way, because he's being strangled by the thighs of his wife, sticking her over the back of her head. And there is a slight downside to this technique, and it's not your strangulation, it's the fact your wife drowns as you go along, but not to worry, at least you have a chance. So that's the thigh strength. And just in case you fancy a little twist, the next technique is the thigh strangulation with leg cross, because she's got a leg cross as well. And this guy won it last year. This is the Estonian boy. He's puffing and blowing a bit, isn't he? But anyway, so these guys, they're going around this massive course and up hills, and they're carrying their wives on their back. I tell you what, I bet he's never ever been so glad to drop his wife in all his life. And when he gets to the end of that, and he puts her back down here. Because it's heavy work, isn't it? Doing all of that with somebody on your back. Somebody else. Not just you, but someone. That is hard work. I really, really don't fancy it. Now, just in case want to know what we're taking for our packed lunches tomorrow, I want to just advise you not to take too much, because it might be a bit of a walk. And so just in case you don't pack too heavy, I've got a picture of sneak preview of tomorrow's packed lunch. Okay? Which is, there it is. It's the world's largest beef burger. And there's 8 pounds of meat in there. That's, how many whoppers is that? Is a half a pound in a whopper? 16 whoppers? Oh. Imagine if that was wrapped up and that was your packed lunch in your pack. It would be pretty heavy. We better take that off the screen, we'll all feel sick. Anyway, don't want you to carry too much. You can easily carry too much through life. You know, life, for some of you, is going to be a long journey. And it makes a difference what you're carrying. It makes a difference if you can make a start because of what you've got on your back. It makes a difference as to whether you can get your Christian life off the ground. It makes a difference as to whether you're going to persevere to the end. It makes a difference what you're carrying with you. I didn't make it to the end of the Pennine Way. I didn't take me 3 weeks. I never got there because I was unwise. I missed some of the stuff that I should have taken with me. I had too much in my bag. My bag was too heavy. It affected me, and I didn't finish. 6 days in, I had to quit and go home on the train because I packed my bag poorly. And we don't want you to pack your bag so poorly that after 6 days of being a Christian, you go back home again. So I want to be Trevor Ridioff for you tonight. I want to help you to unpack your bags. I want to get it all out on the floor, and I want to say, let's not take some of this stuff with us. Let's just not take it through life. Have a look at Matthew 7, 13 and 14. Just turn over the page from where we read. And we looked at these verses yesterday, but I just want to pick one more thing out from these verses. Matthew 7, 13 and 14. All right, I'll just read them again. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Now, we looked about the gates yesterday. We looked about the two different ends of life. One is life and one is destruction. There were two different destinations to our journey. But today I want us to think about the way in, the way you make a start. Some of you are still trying to make a start and become Christians. And I want to think about that narrow gate and the way to get in through the gate. Now, I was taught this as a young child in Sunday school. Some of you were. You know all about the narrow gate. You know all about that. But I can want to confess something to you that I never considered why it was so narrow. Why has God chosen to make the beginning of the Christian life a picture of a narrow gate? Why has God considered that? Why has he given us that picture? I never really thought about that, and maybe you haven't. Why is the gate narrow? There are certain things that are true about a narrow gate. You know, the thing that's true about a narrow gate is you can't get through it really easy with lots of things in your hands. You can't, can you? Try getting through a narrow gate with two massive suitcases, one on each arm, and a massive great big rucksack on your back, and your wife on your shoulders. Try and get through a narrow gap in a wall, or over one of those stiles, or through a narrow little doorway with all of those things. You can't do it. The thing about the narrow gate is you can't easily get through it. That's the point. God has designed, for a real special reason, the entrance to the Christian life to just be fit for one. Squeezed and tightly pressing through. Back home in my house, I've got a little loft space, and it's just tiny. I've got a massive loft and a tiny, tiny little hole. It's kind of 18 inches by about 2 foot. And I always wonder about it. Why do they give you such a large loft and such a tiny hole? I can hardly get anything up there. There's loads of space in there. But I can't get up. I get an empty box, you know, and I can't get it up. It doesn't go. I've got to squash it all down. And if I've got an old bag of things, I can't get it up. I can't even get a suitcase up there. There's no space. I've got to squash things down to get it into my loft. And God says, starting as a Christian, you've got to squash to get through. It's not an easy thing. Here's what we're going to do. I've got three things here. Three things that might stop you getting through the narrow, tight entrance to the beginning of the Christian road. Three things that you can't take through with you. And if you're carrying as your baggage, you may well not get through. And they all begin with P. All right, here's the first one. Pride. When I picture the narrow gate, I picture something that's not just kind of between two walls, but I picture something that's kind of, maybe let's say it's like that, it's a tiny little hole. It's a bit like that owl's house that you all saw on the observation round. You know, it's tiny. To get through a little gap like that, you would have to, what would you have to do? You'd have to scrunch yourself up, and you'd have to squeeze through really slowly and carefully. But a proud man or a proud woman stands up tall and look at who I am. You stand your full height. You want people to look at you. You want people to know how great you are. You know, it's just me. I'm king of my own castle. I'm in charge of my own. This is me. If you take your full height, and if you act really proud, it might stop you squeezing through the narrow way into the way of life. See, God wants humble people. He doesn't want people that are so full of themselves that they're not trusting him. Think of a scramble net on an assault course. You know, sometimes you have these nets, don't you, and they're kind of nailed to the ground, and you've got to go scramble and underneath it. Well, to get under that net, you've got to get down on your hands and knees, and you've got to get your face in the dirt, and you've got to crawl under on your... You're not going to get through that sort of saying, look at me, standing up at your full height. You can't do that. You've got to humble yourself and get down. John was saying at the beginning how incredible it is that Jesus came down from heaven to earth. He humbled himself. To humble yourself, it means to get down from your high place. To get down. And some of you perhaps are not pushing through into the Christian life because you want to do that proud of who you are. You know, there comes a moment to become a Christian, you've got to say, I'm not proud of who I am. You've got to face the reality of who you are really. And the reality of who you are really is the same truth for you as it is for me. And the truth about who I am really is I'm a con, I'm a fraud, I'm a sinner, and I'm useless. And until I face that reality, I walk around in this kind of just blasé, well, look at me, I'm just great, you like what I like, you do what I do, don't you think I'm wonderful, just trying to play act for the crowd. And I'm not going to get down, I'm not going to be humbled, and I'm not going to squeeze through that little game. And that's the way it is. God is looking for humble people who are truly prepared to trust in Jesus Christ instead of themselves. If that's never happened to you, if you've never been humbled, if you've never had a sense that you are not worthy to be a Christian, and that your life isn't right, if you've never had that sense, then maybe you're still outside the gate. That's why you don't feel like you're a Christian, because you're still outside. Pride is keeping you outside. And you need to be awed by God, full of wonder, and say, I'm just a sinner compared to him. You need your heart to be serious, you need your heart to be sorry, and you need your heart to be small. You need those. Made small before a mighty God. That keeps some people out. Here's a second thing that keeps some people out. People. You might be being kept out of heaven, kept out of the narrow gate, kept out of the road that leads to life by people. This is a tragedy, this. But there are all different kinds of people that keep other people out. You know, did you notice when we went on our walk the other day, we went out over the way and past the lake out to the side, and we're all walking together as a big group, and did you notice there's an incredible phenomena that happened? Did you spot this? Well, just as we come to the field, and there's a fence, and there's a stile over, and a very weird thing happened on that stile. Did you spot it? We went over one at a time. There's so many of us. We're a massive crowd. And everybody had to wait. Because everybody knows you can only go over that stile one person at a time. You all did it. I watched. Every one of you went over just on your own. Have you realized the narrow gate that leads to heaven is exactly like that? Forget about the crowd. Forget about your mates. Forget about people on camp. Forget about... You can only go through that narrow gate. It's tight, it's small, it's considerable. You can only go through one of these. You've got to go on your own. Just you. It's about you. If you're kept out by anybody else, that's an absolute tragedy. If you're too busy looking at your mates and laughing and giggling so you don't go over the stile, then the world that's beyond there, which is just the glorious world of Jesus Christ and his glory, is going to escape you. What a tragedy. There are three different kinds of people, I reckon, on camp. I was thinking about this. These are my three different theories. Let's see if you're one of these. Some of you have a piggyback problem. A piggyback problem is people like this. People that want to jump on somebody else's shoulder and get in on the back of somebody else. Right? So some of you think that if you've got a Christian boyfriend, or if you find a Christian girl, that'll get you in. Even though you know your own heart's not right. It's not going to get you in. Maybe your brother's a Christian, maybe your sister is. Maybe your best friends are Christian, they've invited you to come on this camp, but you're not a Christian. And you think that maybe you're kind of covered by them, or you'll get in on the back of their faith. It's not going to happen. Narrow is the gate. It's tight, it's squeezed. You can't get in on the back of anybody else. Nobody can carry you in. There's a second kind. I call this a kangaroo problem. You know kangaroos? They've got this, there's your big kangaroo, and they've got this little pocket. And in that little pocket, there's a little big, little, what do you call them? A Joey. There's a little Joey in the little pocket. He says, he's just in the little pocket. He says, hello, I'm Joe. And his mum just bounces around, and Joey's just in the pocket, and Joey doesn't have to do any work, and mum just hops along, and Joey just sits in the pocket. And he doesn't do anything. He doesn't have to decide where to go. He doesn't have to go over the gate himself, because mummy just pops over, and Joey just sits in the pocket. And some of you are in the pockets of your parents. And your parents are Christians, have been Christians for years, but you've never become one. And you're sat in the pocket. And you think that because you're from a Christian family, and you know all this stuff, just because you've been to Sunday school since you were so young, that you know all this, you think that means you've got answers in the Bible system, and you can just, you know it all, and you're too good for all these things. And you've got a kangaroo problem. You can't get through in the pocket of your parents. Some of you from Christian homes haven't realised the great privilege that you've got from your Christian home, but others of you are just taking it for granted. You haven't realised that you're on your own. When you stand before Jesus Christ and he asks you how you've lived your life, you won't be able to say, well, can you ask my mum and dad? You won't be able to do that. You need to give an answer yourself before the Lord. You need to get out from in there. And some of you have a synchronised swimming problem. I can't stand synchronised swimming. Can you? Is anyone here who does synchronised swimming? How about I just check that before I insult them? Seems to me it's the second most boring sport in the entire world after fishing, you know. But synchronised swimming, you know, they've got these little, you know, things on their noses. And, you know, you put one of the washing clips on it, can't they, on their noses. And they all go in the swimming pool and they swim upside down with their feet in the air and they do all the, I mean, it seems to me that's just a waste of a swimming pool. Anyway, but that's what, and the thing is, they've got to do everything exactly perfectly. And if she puts her leg up, you've got to put your leg up. And if she wiggles her ear, you've got to wiggle your ears. You know, if she bobs down the pool, you've got to bob. And they just, they're watching each other. And they're watching each other. Have you ever seen a camera under a pool of some synchronized swimmers? And they're all the time watching each other to make sure they're exactly in time. And there's hundreds of them. Well, it's about eight, but it looks like there's hundreds of them. And they're all doing exactly the same thing. There's some of you on camera, I've seen you. And you're like, oh, what's he wearing? Oh, I'll wear that. What's he? Oh, I've got to do that. Oh, he's got to go up and I've got to. And you just, you're following each other. And by doing that, it's entirely possible that by doing that, you might be thinking so much about other people and following them and being the same, that you're not squeezing. You've got to strive. You've got to make every effort to get through. You've got to enter through, it says verse 13. You've got to squeeze through. And it's just entirely possible that you may be following the crowd in trying to get through the gate. Now, some of you may not actually be following the crowd. You might be the crowd setter. You're the crowd leader. You're actually the ringleader. And you want other people to follow you. You might be keeping other people out as well as them keeping you out. What a tragedy that is. When you stand before God and he says, "What? How did you do with all the responsibilities and all those privileges I gave you? You heard the gospel, you knew it plain." And you say, "Well, I was too busy trying to lead other people to be like me." What a terrible thing that's going to be. You know, it's not like the point scoring system at the ranch. You know the point scoring system at the ranch? You get 2 points if you do it on your own. But you get 1 point. If you consult somebody else. It's not like that. If you go through that narrow gate on your own, you get a billion, 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 billion years of bliss. And if you go through relying on somebody else, you get nil. That's the way it is. Please make sure it's not somebody else that's keeping you out. If you've got a mindset just to be the same as someone else, rather than trying to follow Jesus Christ, you won't get in. There's the third thing, another P. It's possession. I want to talk a little bit in the rest of the talk about possessions. Possessions, things. Things you want, things you grab, things you live for. They could keep you out. There's not time or space for suitcases and rucksacks to get through that narrow gap. Think of the Egyptians. You know the Egyptians used to take all their treasures and bury them with them in those pyramids and in those tombs. And of course, they didn't take them with them at all. That's why they're still there. We can dig them up. Tutankhamun's tomb's got all his silver and his treasures in it, and his gold and his mummy and all. It's all there because it didn't do them any good. They thought they could take their pleasures and their treasures with them into the next life, and of course they can't. What a tragedy. Absolutely common. I've got a book at home called The World's Wealthiest Losers. It's got a chapter in there about Howard Hughes. You know, he's the star of the Aviator film, perhaps you saw it, with Leonardo DiCaprio. He was the Aviator. What a sad bloke. Howard Hughes, multi-billionaire. And he died a recluse, didn't he? Sad. Shut himself away in a room. Didn't let anybody in. Didn't do anything with his money. He didn't shave. He didn't wash. He collected his pee in milk bottles and put them around the outside of the room. And he just said he was so miserable and lonely. That's how he ended his life. Had billions to spend. He was a groundbreaker in so many different areas of aviation. He had so many possessions. But it kept him from thinking about anything of any meaning. You know, you can't carry much with you through life. You can't carry many possessions. And the teaching of Jesus is so helpful about that. And just before we look at Jesus' teaching about possessions, I want you just to notice one more thing from verses 13 and 14, because it's in the detail, but it's really important that you don't miss it. Right? Somebody tell me from verse 13 how wide the gate is that leads to life. Verse 13 is the one that leads to destruction, isn't it? Okay. But in verse 13, how wide is the gate that leads that way? Just the gate. What does it say about it? Verse 13. Wide, yes? Now what about the road after the gate? From the gate to destruction, how wide then is the road? What does it say about it? Broad, right? So the gate is wide, you can get loads of luggage through, and the road after the gate is broad. You can carry your luggage as far as you want. Now look at verse 14. Verse 14 talks about the road that leads to life. How wide is the gate that leads to life? Small. Now what about the road on the other side of that gate that leads to life? How wide is the road? Narrow. You see the point? It's not just the gate we're talking about. It's not that the gate is narrow, and once you're through, you can live as you please. It's not like going through a tiny little window into a little tunnel into a wide open field. It's not like that. The way, after you become a Christian, is the same width as the gate that you squeeze through. So to be a Christian, you've got to have the same attitude of heart as you become a Christian. You've got to make sure you're not walking with pride, not walking with other people distracting you, and not walking with so many possessions that you can't get through. Some of you have been on camps at Quinter, and at Quinter they've got that lovely canal tunnel. Have you been on walks through the canal tunnel? Please tell me yes. You have. Ben has anyway. He's done it with us. Okay. There's this canal. It's 421 metres long. It's fantastic. And it's totally pitch black in the middle. And you've just got this narrow little path beside this canal tunnel. And it goes underneath. It's a great walk. And the whole of the way through is just as narrow as when you first start. And the Christian life is like that. It doesn't get broader on the other side of the gate. See how helpful that is? Jesus is saying, please don't try and fake your way into the Christian life and then live as you please. If you say to me, well, I've got a testimony, I became a Christian. Just because you say that doesn't mean that you're in the kingdom of... You've got to make sure that you're living the way that shows you're not trusting in these things. And some people have never, ever shown any evidence that they're actually walking that narrow way without all these other things to distract and to hold them back. Just make sure. Make sure about that. Of course, with sins and failures, Jesus is so wonderful and forgiving. He cleanses us and gets us back on track. But just make sure that you don't think that you're living how you want. You are a Christian and you're saved, so therefore you can live as you please. You can't. You can't do that. Because the road is as narrow as the gate. And it's just perfect time for the big mistake of the day. So stand up, take a minute. What I want you to do is have the biggest yawn you've ever had in your life. Try not to whack the people on the head on either side. Open your mouth, have an almighty yawn for a minute. Stand up, get some air. Okay, guys, sit back down again. Okay. Okay, today's big mistake of the day then is this. Today's big mistake of the day is that I can have Jesus and everything I want. I've met loads of people that have made this mistake. Please don't make it. Please don't think you can have Jesus as your Savior, be a Christian, and have anything else you want. Can't do it. You just cannot do it. Some things do not go hand in hand with Christian behavior. They just don't. I'm not going to give you a list of what all those things are, but trust me, there are some. This fantastic book that has been rushing off the bookshelves at a fast speed. speed due to Pete's wonderful book review yesterday, The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer. We have none left on the bookstore, so you can't buy it. But here's a little quote on chapter 2 is about this. It says, the blessedness of possessing nothing. Let me just give you one little sentence. It says in this A.W. Tozer book, sin has introduced complications in the world and has made the very gifts of God, that's all the things he's given you, a potential source of ruin for your soul. Wow, that's awesome, isn't it? God has given us so many things in life, and they're wonderful, and they're to be enjoyed. But if we hang on to those possessions, and if we love them and trust them so much, then they could be a potential source of ruin for our souls. There are certain things that God says are just a big, fat, plain no, you can't have them. There are other things you've got to weigh up. Is it right, and is it good for me to have them? There are other things that are okay and are plausible. Let's have a look at what Jesus says in Matthew 6 about possessions, because there's a whole section there. We read it, look. Matthew 6. Just have a quick look. There's lots of things he says here, and these are his things for how you should travel light. Let's have it up on the screen. We're the first one, I think, because these are reasons to keep your bags light. And it's all about earthly treasures, right? I've got a few reasons here. The first one is in verse 19. Earthly treasures aren't safe anyway. Somebody read verse 19 for us of Matthew chapter 6. Somebody? Verse 19? Thank you. Don't store up treasures here. Don't just amass possessions because they're not safe. Look how many dangerous things there are. Moths come and eat them. Things get broken. Rust destroys it. People steal them. I've had things break already on this camp. And I've only been away from home 4 days. Already some of my stuff's broken. You can amass whatever you like in this world, but it's not safe. It's not safe. This is Jesus speaking. He says, fill your life full of earthly treasures, but they're not safe. That's a crazy focus of your life and your soul if it's just on things. Second thing he says, number two, earthly treasures keep your heart on earth rather than in heaven. That's verse 21. Somebody read verse 21 for us. Matthew 6. Thank you. If your treasure is here, you're going to want to look after it, and your heart's going to be in it, and you're going to live for where your treasure is. And he says, well, but if you put your treasure in heaven, your heart will be there. Do you really want your heart just to be on this earth when we're all passing through, when life is not all that there is, and hell is not just for criminals, and I can't ignore the Bible? You don't want your heart just to be here. There's a better country to come. So that's what Jesus says. Don't let your treasures, your possessions here, mean that your heart is not ready for heaven. His third piece of advice. Earthly treasures give you divided loyalty. Somebody read verse 24 for us. Thanks very much. You can't serve two masters, can you? You girls from Liverpool, right? Is it possible, just ask me, is it possible to support Liverpool and Everton? Why not? You say because Everton will, but she says because Liverpool will. No. But you can't do it, can you? It can't be done, right? Because they're both rubbish and Forest are the best, agreed? No, but you see my point, don't you? If you can't live in Manchester and support City and United. You can't live in Nottingham and support Forest and County. You can't support Liverpool and them. You just can't do it. There's no way. You've got to serve one or the other. Jesus says you can't live in the world and live for money and possessions, for fame and image. You can't do that and serve God. You can't do it. It's going to ruin your soul. Maybe you're trying. Some of you might be trying to juggle the two. You can't do it. Jesus says it'll divide your loyalties and it'll be disastrous. Number four. Earthly treasures will distract you from more important things in life. Some of you have been showing this already this week. Verse 25. Somebody read verse 25 for us? Who's got that? Somebody, please? Thanks very much. Great testimony we had last night from Naomi. She discovered this in her own life, didn't she? Her life is more important than how she looks and what she wears. You guys know that, really. But what a struggle we sometimes have in our hearts about that, don't we? We are conscious of what we wear, how we look like, what the mirror says to us. We are conscious. But here's Jesus saying, I made you. You're beautiful. You're wonderful. You are a treasure. Trust me, if God didn't love and care for you, you wouldn't be here. Neither would I. You are so valuable for God. So valuable to him. He wants the best for you. And he can see your heart. He's not worried by what you wear and what you look like. Don't let the things of this world distract you from more important things. Life is far more important than whether you've got the latest phone or whether you're wearing the right label. It's far more important than that. You know, people that crave for earthly treasures, people who do this, they end up loving things and using people rather than using things and loving people. Have you turned into somebody like that yet? Oh, I hope you haven't. But beware, because it's coming. If you live for earthly treasures and you ignore God, you will soon be a lover of things and a user of people in order to get the things that you want, rather than using things and loving people. Number five, Jesus says, earthly treasures will make you live a life of worry. Have you discovered this yet? I reckon you have. Somebody read verse 27 for us, please, would you? Who's got verse 27? Thank you. If you've got some Bibles, you'll see there's a little letter after that and a little note down the margin. It says it also could be a stature to his height. You can't make yourself an inch taller. You can't make yourself live an hour longer. Can anybody think of a single problem in the entire history of the universe that's ever been solved by worrying? Because I can't. In fact, I've been worrying about it all day. You can't solve a single thing by worrying, can you? It makes complete sense. So Jesus says, why are you worrying about how much money you've got, what car you drive, what career you're going to get, whether your parents are as wealthy as the next person, whether you're wearing the right stuff, whether you've got the flat screen HD TV. I mean, people worry about these things. I used to work with a lady who was so worried about her daughter when she was born. She was so worried that she wouldn't be the brainiest girl in the class. She was so worried that other people wouldn't think she came from a wealthy family. She was so worried. Do you know what age she sent her to school? 6 months old. She sent her child to school at 6 months old, and she went to boarding school at 6 months and came out at three, fluent in three languages. She was so worried, she spent thousands of pounds on it when that child should have been at home in her mother's arms, learning from her mother. People are so worried about things. You can be distracted and live a complete life of worry, but you won't live a day longer. In fact, it'll be completely opposite. You need to replace that with trusting God. Look at verse 25. God tells us not to worry, doesn't he? It's a tough verse, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life. Really tough verse to do. It's a command, but it's very, very difficult to do. There's only one way to do it. The only antidote to it is to trust God to provide what you need. It's the only antidote. It's no good adopting one of the world's anthems. You know, one of the world's anthems is, don't worry, be happy. That's not a Christian anthem. That's not a Christian phrase at all. That's the world's postmodern anthem. Don't worry about things. Just be jolly, be happy. Just forget about it. That's not Christian at all. Don't worry, be happy doesn't work. It's don't worry because you trust and believe you've got a Heavenly Father who will provide for all your needs. That's why you don't worry. And that's what this passage is all about. Talk about these birds, verse 26. And the birds don't go off to Tesco, do they? But they get food. And it talks about these lilies of the field, verse 28. Now, some of you ladies are very attractive. But you're not as beautiful as a lovely lily. And I'll call my daughter Lily. No, I won't. But not as beautiful as that. And God has just made these lilies, and they're just beautiful. And they're not going out shopping for clothes, but they're dressed in all this splendor. See, God has provided for them. The antidote to worry is to know that God will provide for you. There's one more. Listen. Earthly treasures can turn you into a pagan. Somebody read verses 31 and 32. Would you for me, please? Those two verses, 31 and 32. Do you know, of all the verses in the Bible, I really think those two verses are put in the Bible from God for Christian teenagers. I really do. Why are you worrying about the things that your peers are worrying about? get your soul secure and walking with Jesus Christ. Be a light in a wicked world. Don't turn into a pagan. Pagans worry about this. A pagan is somebody that's concluded in their heart there is no God and I'm not bothered about it. That's a pagan. But that ain't you. I know it's some of you. And those that are in that category need to realize that life isn't all that there is. And that you're heading for a lost destination. But those of you that are seeking to live the Christian life, don't live like pagans. Your attitudes have got to be so different. Because you're the Lord's now. You're a child of God. You should walk so differently. So am I saying then, because of these things, Jesus says we've got to sell all our possessions, get rid of all our CDs, get rid of the MP3 player, get rid of the television, throw out all the books. Have I got to get rid of everything? Well, no, I'm not saying that. Some of you might need to get rid of a few things. Some of you might have to get rid of the relationship that's holding you back. Relationships can so easily hold you back. If you're a young Christian trying to grow, I just need to counsel you to be very, very careful who you go out with. Be very careful. Because even if you think he's a Christian, or he says he's a Christian, or that girl, even if she says she's a Christian, or you think she's a Christian, A, she might not be, or he might not be. And B, even if he is it going to distract you from growing in your Christian life so early on? And I got a piece of advice when I was converted on camp from a pastor, and he said, he recommends that people who, when they become Christians, don't go, or even think about going out with people for the first 2 years of their Christian life. And I thought, well, he's a right nutter, he is. That's a really dodgy piece of advice. And then I became a pastor myself later, and I thought, what wisdom in that advice. I wish I'd followed it. I just pass it on to you. Guard your soul. Guard your soul. Be very careful. Relationships can pull you back. Don't be thirsting for a relationship if your Christian life isn't on track. Because it won't get you back on track, and it will even hold you back. Make sure that you're getting your life on track with God. Got just a few alternatives. We're nearly done. Jesus gives us three alternatives. Jesus' alternative way to live. It's much, much better than all those. Here you go. We'll just do these quick and you can jot them down. Number one, trust God to provide what you need. We read it for the ravens and the lilies and the birds. Verse 26, 30 and 32. Trust God will provide for what you need. Don't worry about all this other stuff. God will provide. If you need it, he'll give it to you. He's a loving Heavenly Father. We heard that wonderfully in the testimony. Don't be striving and hassling for it all. God will provide. That's the first thing. Number two, God's kingdom and righteousness are the most important things. Verse 33, we've got to read that verse. It's really important. Look, verse 33, it says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. See what God's saying? Get your priorities right, and I'll sort out the rest. That's what he's saying to you. Now, this is a personal word for you now. Don't just let it go to anybody else. I'm saying to you, on God's behalf, put God first in the priority in your life, and God will sort out the other stuff. Leave it to him. He's an expert at it. He's currently, at the last calculation, looking after 6.5 billion lives. There's a further 54 billion lives that have lived before that. 60 billion lives have walked on this planet, nearest estimate. God has looked over every single one of them. You aren't going to fox it and fool it, okay? He's a master at it. Leave all the stuff to him. Seek the first priority. Get yourself into God's kingdom. Make sure you're inside. Make sure you've squeezed through the gate. You're not carrying too much baggage. You're not being distracted by others. And then when you're through, live for the righteousness on the commands of Jesus Christ as Lord over your life, as we were looking at yesterday. They're the most important things. And if you live like that, the Lord will sort everything else out that needs to be sorted. And the third, sort out your real treasure. Because the only real safe place to put your treasure is not in the bank, it's not in real estate, it's not in your CD collection, but it is in heaven. Verse 20. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. Lay up yourself treasure in heaven. I wonder how you do that. Can anyone give me one way that you might be able to lay up some treasure in heaven? How can you store a bit of treasure in heaven? Somebody give me an idea.
Lead someone to Christ.
Okay, lead someone to Christ. That'd be a great one. Okay, anything else?
Give up something for Christ.
Give up something for Christ, okay. Were you going to say the same? Do it secretly. For the sake of God rather than to show off. Okay, top man. Why don't you live to please Jesus Christ? Everything you do to please Jesus will lay up for yourself some treasure in heaven. Everything you do to please him. Stuff you do to please yourself will stay in this world and will get lost. stuff you do to please Jesus Christ, to honour Jesus Christ? When you say no to your boyfriend when he's trying to push you too far, and you say, no, my body's a temple of the Holy Spirit, I'm not going any further. It may not please him. You may have to lose him. But if it pleases Jesus Christ, it'll be treasure for you in heaven. And that'll last a billion, billion, billion years. Don't lay up treasure here. Lay up treasure in heaven. That's where it really counts. I want to finish actually with that word sacrifice that was just mentioned. You know, Christians are only Christians because Jesus made the sacrifice of giving up his life for you. And he calls us sometimes to sacrifice things for him. Not in the same way, not to die on a cross, because we can't do that. But if you've never ever given anything up, anything at all, because you're a Christian, that may be a sign that you're not living with number two put right in your life, God's kingdom and righteousness first. It may be a sign that you're making this mistake, the big mistake of the day. You're trying to have Jesus and everything. You can't have everything. You can't be a flirt and be a Christian. You can't really live to be totally number one selfish, looking after just yourself and be a Christian. You can't do those things. You can't be a liar, a habitual liar, and be a Christian. Because this will show your fruit as something different. You make mistakes in those areas, you've got to bring them to the Lord. But it's absolutely crucial that you give God the priority in your life. I've got one last slide, I think, Tom. Jesus said, if anyone would follow me, he must, look at this, very important word, deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Something about you has got to be denied and laid off. Some bags have got to be dropped. Some of your t-shirts, John, have got to be taken out of your case and not taken. And some of the things that you're hanging on to in life have got to be laid aside so you can walk the road. Get through the narrow gate and walk the road that leads to life. I really hope that's helpful for you. And I really hope you don't take too much, because it's so important that you find life. Let's pray. Lord, we pray for help for these things, for every one of us. And we thank you. There's so much wise teaching in your word. Thank you for the Sermon on the Mount we've been looking at in Matthew. Thank you.